customer service is the new marketing, all you really have to do is get a couple advocates that come in and have a really great experience, and they will spread the news.
Welcome to The Dental Marketer. This is your go-to podcast for diving deep into the world of business, marketing, self-development, and dentistry. From startup secrets to real talk with the pros, we've got it all. So whether you're just starting out or you're deep in years in running your own practice, join us for a mix of success stories, a few learning curves, and loads of insights from the brightest in the industry. We'll chat, learn, and grow together, one episode at a time. How do you successfully navigate the balance between starting a new career and a new family? Well, you're going to want to listen into this enlightening episode with Dr. Megan Scarborough. She's a fantastic guest with a ton of insight in this episode. She paints a vivid picture of the challenges and triumphs she encountered while running her dental practice and managing the high demands of being a freshly minted professional and a new mom. Going from Texas to Tennessee, she takes us into her journey of innovation and adaptability, opening up about the unique approaches she has introduced to her practices. She has multiple practices, but that's not all. Megan takes us deeper into her world with her candid discussion on the role of hygienists, the importance of good team dynamics in a practice, and the fine line between offering quantity and maintaining quality service. She brings in a completely new and innovative approach to her practice, drawing inspiration from the service model of Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A. She expands on how focusing on exceptional service and comprehensive patient care brings both success to her practice and satisfaction to her patients. What you're going to learn in this episode is, number one, how to balance a starting career with motherhood. Two, insider knowledge about running a successful practice. Three, the importance of team dynamics and partnership in the dental field. Four, the role of hygienists and how they impact your practice. And five, how you can adopt the Chick-fil-A model of service in your practice. I'm excited for you to listen to this episode. So without further delay, here is Dr. Megan Scarborough. Megan, how's it going?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. If you don't mind me asking, where are you located?
I currently live in Franklin, Tennessee. It's 20 miles south of Nashville.
Oh, wow. Okay. Awesome. So then if you can, tell us a little bit about your past, your present. How'd you get to where you are today?
So I have been a dentist for 10 years. I graduated from dental school in 2013 with a brand new baby. I walked the stage with a four-week-old son. He is 10. Whoa, that'll get me a little bit. So that's where my journey started, being a mother and a dentist all at the same time. Talk about two like areas of profession, if you would, that are in full isolation, right? So you're a dentist, you graduate from dental school, you have no idea what you're doing, and you're kind of thrown into this world of, it does feel a little bit like isolation. And then at the same time, I have a four-week-old baby that I have no idea what I'm doing. So that's kind of where my journey started. I am a native Texan, so Tennessee is new to me. I have been in Tennessee for 3 years, honestly, from just a leap of faith of just really sprinting through every avenue of dentistry for the last 10 years. I was looking for happiness. So I worked for a retired dentist right out of school who told me, hey, come work with me. I want to retire. I worked with him for about 7 months and he let me go. He wasn't ready to sell his practice. So my husband and I just pivoted and I became a partner with a female dentist. We were 50-50, just kind of rolling through what I thought dentistry was supposed to look like. And the partnership failed within a year. So then I became a dentist on roller skates. I worked as an associate for 18 months, working, you know, the long hours, 11 to 8, and then the next morning, 7 to 4, and working one Saturday a month. And I just really never found the dentistry that I loved. So I got pregnant again with my second and told my husband that I felt like the only job security that I could really find was purchasing my own practice. So 3 years after school, I bought my first practice when I was 7 months pregnant with my second. And then my husband became a stay-at-home father to help me pursue my dream of acquisition. And we got pregnant again. So we've had a lot of babies. We have 3 kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had another one 20 months later. My husband jokingly says that it was job security for him because he loved being a stay-at-home father. So he got me pregnant and he got to stay home longer. So he was a stay-at-home dad for 5 years with our 2 littles. And in the pandemic, I decided to open a startup. So as I talk about this, I realize I'm just sprinting, right? I'm like sprinting through every finish line possible. I felt like I was doing it all. And I really wasn't ever super happy. I love dentistry. I love people. I love my patients, but I couldn't find the perfect blend of a work-life balance. So what happened? 21, I had 2 practices and 3 kids and a husband that had the perfect life, living at home, working out twice a day, living in this gorgeous, I said, palace. You know, it's kind of hard to drive away from it every day. And I told him that I was done, that I was ready to throw in the towel and quit. And we put both of our practices and our home on the market to sell, and everything sold except the first practice we bought when I was 7 months pregnant. It was so mature that the only buyers I could get were DSOs. It was annual revenue was over $2 million. So I met with 10 DSOs and I just couldn't do it. So we moved to Tennessee and kept it. So we've been remote from the Texas practice. And then we acquired a practice in Nashville in 22, and we're opening our 3rd location this summer. So I have found that my 10 years of dentistry has been me finding what dentistry looks like for women. Hmm. And I feel as though, although my voice gets a little shaky because it's truly a testimony. It's emotional. It's time, and it coincides with life, and it really stretched me. But I am in a place now that I love dentistry because I'm giving back what I never got. So I'm currently not practicing dentistry, and I have 3 locations where I'm supporting the women in the practice so that they can come in and work and go home and be a mother and a wife and whatever other roles they play.
Gotcha. Interesting. Wow. So there's so much. If we could rewind a little bit, you mentioned brand new baby, brand new mother, parent, dentist, all at the same time, right? And this is something that's not new for the individual, but we see it often. What goes through your mind at that time?
Yeah, I think as a dentist specifically, we are high achievers and we want to be good at being a dentist or a wife or a mother. And I think the biggest thing for me was I really loved being the mother. I would tell my husband, man, if I had not graduated and had this baby sooner, I would have quit and chosen motherhood. It's innate, right? Like you have a child and it's part of the story, right? You're supposed to have kids and you're supposed to be a mother. And it's the most wonderful gift that's so innate. And it was so easy for me. Like it was my outlet. So What happened for me, I think, is that because they aligned so closely, 4 weeks, you know, having a baby and graduating from dental school, is that I favored being the mother. And so I wasn't really the best dentist clinically, right? I love people. And I felt like every time I was working on the business, it wasn't even dental specific. Like I was like, how do I improve their experience? How do I make it easier on them? Like I was a mom and I'm going to the dentist. What would it look like for me to take time away? And so I kept thinking about how to run the business and not really how to be this amazing dentist. I didn't fall in love with dentistry. I fell in love with my children and I fell in love with the people that were my patients that had the same story as me. So that's kind of where all my hard work went. I worked really hard on being a part of the community and being like understanding what they needed as a patient.
Okay. That's good. That's really, really good. And then you're a native Texan and you moved to Tennessee. Why?
Well, so my husband's a licensed attorney. And so one day I came home and I said, I'm done. What are our options? He's like, what do you mean you're done? I'm like, I'm done. I want to sell everything we have and get out of debt. We were in so much debt from law school and dental school, practice loans. And he's so good about translating my emotions into paper and logistics. And he wrote it out. He was like, this is how much debt we're in. And this is how much everything is worth. If we sell, he said, where in Texas would you want to go? And I said, well, nothing is better than Austin. Like, I'm a native Texan. You work hard to get to Austin. I'm from Amarillo, so small town, cattle. And I made it to San Antonio for dental school. And Austin was the best, right? Like, I had made it. I'm in the best city, I felt, in Texas. So moving anywhere outside of that felt kind of like a downgrade. So I threw out Florida, which if any Florida dentists are listening, you guys are really smart because it's very hard to be a dentist in Florida. So the reason why Tennessee happened is because it was the only state that we were both able to move to with reciprocity on our license.
Okay, interesting. And so then immediately you kind of, from that point on, you and your husband started working towards that.
It was about 2 weeks. We didn't work very hard. The doors literally flew open. I don't even remember knocking on them. Like we decided we were going to sell. And that was probably the hardest part because everyone in our life, professional and personal, couldn't know. And so that was hard, but it was 21 and it was a peak and it was awesome. And it wasn't hard to sell. So We didn't even knock. Like somehow we ended up in Nashville. My husband was a bachelor for many years before he met me. And he's like, I've been to Nashville once and it was fun.
Yeah.
So we went there and we brought the kids and we stayed on a farm. And I was like, I don't know about this. This sounds kind of crazy. But some doors just flew open. I met a girl on the Mommy Dental page that I'm on. Mm-hmm. And she was a dentist in Franklin and they took us to dinner. And all of a sudden, we bought a home off of Facebook in Franklin. Like, it was wild, wild.
Wow.
And we left our family behind. I mean, it was an emotional journey, but within just a couple months of us deciding we were here.
Yeah, interesting. And then, so why didn't you want to sell to a DSO?
Yeah, so that was a really cool journey for me because I just work really hard and I love people really well. And so when my work and my business and my team's efforts were on paper for sale, and you're meeting with non-dentists that are analyzing why you're profitable, the conversations, I would just leave and go, I know a lot more than I think I know. I mean, they would ask me, you know, you have this recipe. We're not able to really pinpoint where the success is coming from. And they would ask me all these questions and they were so off. I was like trying to be professional, but at the same time, I was like, you're so off. Like, you don't understand that if you just treat people well, and that includes your team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then things just work. I was just kind of, honestly, I just felt a little, I don't know, there's a pit in my stomach about it. And these people are they're my family. Like, I was basically selling my family. Didn't feel right. And they didn't know as much as me. And so I thought, well, maybe I could do what they do.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. So then could you pinpoint the success? I know you said it's like, hey, treat the people just like family, right? But like, where was it coming from? Was it, what did that formula look like?
Yes. So I can definitely pinpoint it. There was a moment where we lived outside of Austin and I was, again, with my brand new baby. I had just lost my job. Like, life was really hard for me at that time. And I was 45 minutes away from the closest Chick-fil-A. And so, you know, if you have a baby and a 45 minute drive one way just to get a chicken sandwich, like, people don't do that. And so I did that. And I drove to Chick-fil-A. Didn't even get out of my car. I was just hoping the baby would sleep the whole way. Got my predictable sandwich and fries and Diet Coke and probably brownie at the time. Mm-hmm. And drove back and I got pulled over. I guess one of the rules is like if a cop's on the side, you're supposed to go the other lane, which I didn't know about. So I got pulled over. And he was like, ma'am, where are you going? And I said, I'm going home. And he said, but And he was trying to figure out, like, where are you coming from? And I said, well, I went to Chick-fil-A. He's like, he was starting to do the math. He's like, you literally drove an hour and a half for Chick-fil-A? And at that point, I realized that as a mother, like as a consumer of Chick-fil-A, that I did choose Chick-fil-A because of really just the things that the brand does really well. Like, I knew that it was going to be predictable. The product is the same. The service is exceptional. And it was pretty convenient. I didn't have to get out of my car, but it's more convenient if you look closer. And so I started reaching out to Chick-fil-A owners at that point. Only 6 months out of school, I started interviewing Chick-fil-A managers, owners, and almost convinced my husband we should buy Chick-fil-A and quit dentistry. But I started studying the business of Chick-fil-A, and I thought, why reinvent the wheel? Let's do this in dentistry. I just isolated all the little things that they do really well and just started translating that into dentistry. So one of the biggest things for our success is a model that we call convenience. It's a KPI that we measure. We took the same day dentistry that we all know of, and I hated that word, and I don't want to feel like a same day dental woman. Mm-hmm. So I took it out and I said, hey, what can we do that conveniently adds value to their service today? And that's what we did. We created a menu of service for every patient on the schedule. So it was like, what does this patient qualify for? And what can we add to this service today? And we started changing the way we talked. Our verbiage changed. Like, we have buzzwords, so we don't say certain things like, are you here for a cleaning? Like, we all clean our toilets at home. Like, we're not cleaning your teeth. We're providing a hygiene service. We're hygienists. You know, we went to professional school. So we just started slowly changing our model into what we call the Chick-fil-A dentist.
Interesting. So that's for every single patient then? Every single patient has a menu kind of deal?
Yes, yes. Every single patient, we wrote out a menu on their appointment. And we would verify what their orthodontic benefits were, what their night guard coverage was, like the things at the time that was the dentistry I was doing, fluoride. I mean, we were basically training the team to have the autonomy to look at the menu and say, hey, this patient works for, let's say, Dell. Austin's big on Dell. They work for Dell. They have these benefits. This is what they're already paying for every month with their dental coverage. So let's inform them of the services they qualify for. And we just took off with it. I remember the first DSO was like, did you know? And I was like, no, I didn't know that. That the revenue that I was generating, more than half was coming from the hygiene department.
All because of this model that you made.
Yes. Yes. And we were definitely quality driven. So we weren't trying to put a lot of patients in. We were just making sure the ones that committed to us for the day were getting everything that they qualified for.
Mm. Okay. So was your practice, or is it PPO heavy, or?
When I bought the first practice, it was fee for service. And I was this young dentist that was, you know, I told my consultant at the time, well, I have to go and network because I'm here to work for the community. And this is why I went to dental school. So I did actually take a fee-for-service practice into a PPO. But she was smart. And she said, look, you only want to do it this one way. So it was an umbrella company. So one fee schedule for every single contracted plan. And so that's kind of how I learned it. And it did really help us, you know, grow. I tripled the practice revenue in 3 years when I bought it. And I think a lot of it was that we weren't just fee for service. Now, I am a huge advocate now, 10 years later, that insurance it should be obsolete at some point. I mean, I do believe that it's not going to be a driving force for me.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So then when it comes to this model, and you said the quality is more important than quantity. So you're not taking in a bunch of new patients. Your marketing is kind of different. Everything's different, right? So would it be heavier on the treatment coordinator or to close or to like present the options, or who had the more, I guess, like if we were to tilt the scale, they had more of the weight of like, hey, you got to Are you trained in this? You got to present it right.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think that the traditional dentistry that I looked up to was this one doctor, right, that everyone kind of idolized, and everyone else was, it was a hierarchy and everyone was kind of below him. And I say him because that's just kind of what my generation was, right? And I feel like what the missing piece is even currently is that we do not use our hygienists enough to be mid-level providers. So I really pushed heavy on my hygiene team because I'm back to the isolation, and I love my team now. My team is very different now than it was when I first started. But when you come out of dental school and you've gone through all this education and you're at a level of professionalism and you go into a business that's maybe a $1 million business and you don't have anyone to talk to that's on your level, I realized that dentistry had created that separation with hygienists. Hygienists are smart. I mean, they're smarter than dentists because they realize they shouldn't be a dentist and they should have more flexibility and be a hygienist and work PRN. So I really started hiring the right hygienists to be co-pilots with me and co-discover. And I like to hire people that are better than me, smarter than me, faster than me, whatever. So I would hire hygienists that would, during an interview, I'd be like, I don't know what you just said, but you sound really smart and we should work together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I joke because I'll go in an exam and my hygienist will talk about the visit and I'll go, do you guys need me? I don't really know where I fit in this equation, because they are the catalyst. Definitely. Now our team supports them, but I think of a boulder analogy, like it's a big boulder that they're like pushing this huge rock to the end of the cliff. And I tell them, you guys, I have 3 hygiene exams in an hour, so I want to just ding those boulders off that cliff when I come in. And they do a really good job setting the table for me and our new doctors that are adopting this model.
Okay, that's interesting. So then hiring the right hygienist sounds easy, but how? Like, how do we even indeed? And then from that point on, we just group interview, individual interview. And then what do you ask with these interviews?
Well, if someone that works for me listens to this, they're going to laugh because I'm the worst interviewer ever. I love everybody and I'll come out and be like, I love them. Let's hire them. So I will say my 10-year-old, like 10 years ago self, and now I do feel like there is kind of a recipe for it. I do believe that you hire for personality. You know, one question I love to ask is, what is your morning routine? And I remember I interviewed a guy and I was like, what is your morning routine? And of course, I'm married. And he was like, I don't think you want to know. And I was like, oh, gosh, like, that was not what I was asking. And he was like, no, like, I actually do this very weird thing every morning. And I was like, okay. And he was like, I climb a rope outside my home that's tied to this tree. And it's, I don't know how many feet all the way up. And I was like, okay, keep going. And he's like, I get up in the morning and that's the first thing I do. And I said, that is very interesting. Why do you do that? And he said, because it'll be the hardest thing I do all day. So I like to ask people what their morning routine is, because I think that a lot of dentistry and success for clinicians is founded on discipline. And I am a collegiate athlete, so I'm a little biased on hiring people that have that built into their genes. I think you have to find people that are very disciplined, very hardworking, very performance driven, very likable. And I will tell you, the biggest thing is just paying people really well. If you want them to do something really good for you, you need to reward them with good pay.
Okay. Well, what advice would you give if, like, you're just starting out and they're like, Megan, I can't. I mean, I'm not even breaking even. Like, and I want to keep them, but they're getting jobs at Buc-ee's, right? Like, they're getting paid way more there. So what would you recommend in that scenario?
Like, they're not breaking even?
Yeah, like, it's not even in their budget to give, like, okay, a better raise or pay them better, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, okay. Better. So don't tell anyone my secret, but we charge $54 for fluoride, and we offer that every 6 months. So If you can train your hygienist to show value in that, there are some people that are probably going to listen to this and be like, fluoride is bad, but fluoride in my mind is not bad. And it is a service that only we can provide. So $54 and they provide fluoride and their acceptance rate is high. That is paying for itself for your wages of your hygienist. So everything above that, you're producing a revenue.
So it's as simple as that small little 1% things, right? That you can just kind
of... Yeah, it's all the 1% that add up. And I will tell you, the fluoride thing was not my idea. Remember how I told you I hire people that are smarter, faster, you know, all the things, right? So I hired this brand new hygienist and I loved her personality. She was a gymnast and she... I was just head down working. Like 2 weeks went by and the administrative team was like, hey, do you know that she's offering fluoride to everybody at $50? This is back in 2018, 19, $50. And I said, oh my gosh, we're going to get so many mad patients. Like, have we gotten any bad reviews? Like did she get consent? Like, did she stop in the middle and get consent? And she goes, no, actually, no one's had said anything. They are all accepting and paying for it. Mm-hmm. And so her first month that we got everyone to do it, like when we told everyone, let's all try it. Like, how do you do it? And she told us what she did. And we did $12,000 in fluoride in 1 month.
Wow. So could I ask, how does she do it?
Yeah. So, you know, when you go order a burger and they're like, would you like, you know, avocado? And you're like, yeah, that sounds great. Bacon, whatever. Well, you don't stop mid-conversation and say, well, how much is the bacon? And so she doesn't do that. She just says, hey, you qualify for fluoride today, and I have grape, mint, or raspberry. Which flavor would you like? I mean, it was that simple. She said, like, once they choose the flavor, they're choosing the service, just like you would with avocado or bacon. I did panic a little bit. We have to say three things out loud when we're applying it that is a benefit for them getting it. And we do like sometimes if the doctor is available at the end of the appointment to apply it, because I think that there is additional value in that. But yeah, it was that simple, just asking them which flavor.
Are you feeling the pinch with the soaring costs of dental supplies? It's a common struggle that puts a damper on the spirits of dental practices everywhere. But hold on, because we've got electrifying news that's about to turn that frown upside down. Welcome to the revolution of dental supply shopping, brought to you by TDSC, the Dentist Supply Company. Imagine a world where high supply costs don't dictate your practice's budget or limit your potential. That world is here, and the Dentist Supply Company is leading the charge with competitive pricing that's sending shockwaves through the industry. Now, let's amp up the excitement with something you can't afford to miss. Exclusively for you, the Dentist Supply Company is offering an outstanding 25% off orders over $500 with the promo code TDM25. Yep, you heard it right. 25% off. It's the golden ticket to slashing your expenses without cutting corners, ensuring you get top quality supplies at prices that make your budget breathe a sigh of relief. But remember, some exclusions apply, so make sure to check the details. This isn't just about savings. It's a movement towards empowering dental practices to thrive without being bogged down by financial constraints. You'll see at TDSC.com that it's not just a supplier, they're your ally in navigating the choppy waters of the dental industry. With this exclusive deal, TDSC is throwing you a lifeline, making it possible to keep your practice well-stocked with essentials and beyond, all while keeping your finances in check. So what are you waiting for? Go to TDSC.com and dive headfirst into their world of competitive pricing. Don't let high supply costs nibble away at your budget any longer. Seize this opportunity to make significant savings that truly smile back at you. And remember to use the promo code TDM25 to unlock these incredible savings. It's time for action. It's time to join the Dentist Supplies Company's revolution and witness the transformation in your practice firsthand. Let's do this together, because with TDSC, the future of dental supply shopping is brighter than ever before. So go in the show notes below, click the first link in the show notes below to see everything they have to offer you today.
Now, when it came to, you mentioned you want to just ding the boulder, over, right? At the very end of the appointment. So then what do you specifically do?
I got coached on this. My consultant would watch me do exams and pretty much tell me what I was doing was all wrong. And she told me that when you come in as a dentist, they want to see you and know that you are going to keep them safe and that you are kind, and that when you numb them or whatever you're doing, that that is going to be a warm space. So she just really said to stop doing all the things I was doing. I was like pulling up pictures and showing them the 2/3 of the blah, blah, blah that was, you know, missing and why it needed a crown. And that's kind of what I do. I just come in and I reinforce what the hygienist has discovered. And a lot of times I'm at a point now where I'm coaching people how to do what I did, because that's the hard part. Like, I figured it out, but now I have to train other dentists to do it. So I tell them, you know, just pick one thing. So if the hygienist says there's 4 honeydew lists, well, let's just do one. And I pick the one that I feel like is the highest priority. And I get them in my chair for the next appointment. I build rapport, and then I start to plant the seeds for additional treatment. So that has really helped with case acceptance, retention, and comprehensive care.
Yeah, interesting. This all kind of ties into what you said too. Like, for example, like an athlete, right? If you see someone athletic, I forgot what they said, but like you can tell immediately a couple things from them, right? They have discipline, they have delayed gratification, grit. They have a lot of these hyper-focus, all these things just from watching their athleticism, right? And so right now with you, you're building the report, delayed gratification. You're kind of just watching it. Interesting. That's really good. So then with that being said, if we fast forward now, you have 3 practices up and running?
So I have 2 that are running, 1 in Tennessee and 1 in Texas. And I have a startup we're opening this summer. And they are all operating without me as the dentist. And I love my dentist. And if they hear this, I keep saying, if they hear this, like, I love everyone. So I don't want anyone to be upset. But my model is where I do want my dentist to only be dentists. So I don't allow buy-in. So they are dentists, and they have a really good package, in my opinion. I basically wrote down everything that I wanted when I was there, and I'm working really hard to give that to them. For example, I didn't have PTO. My kids were sick. I was sick, or just wanted to take a vacation and still make money while I'm on vacation as an associate. So all my doctors get 16 full days of PTO, so 4 weeks. They get paid on a tier of a merit system. Again, things I've pulled from other companies. The merit system was from a camp that my son goes to in Texas called Camp Longhorn. And he came home and he loved all these merits he had. And I'm like, perfect. We're going to do that for our business. So they get paid based off of not only what they do production-wise, but also like retaining patients, adding new patients, their 5-star reviews. And the higher that they produce for the month, the higher their percentage goes up. So it's a sliding scale. And so I'm trying really hard to incentivize them to be high producers and to think about the business and not just be dentists like some of the other businesses are run. But yes, I do have 2 operating offices. They're almost identical in nature. And the third one, this will be my first time to do a startup fee for service.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's going to be interesting. Now, none of them you said can partner, right?
No, they can't.
I was going to ask, would it have something to do with maybe because of your partnership that went or no?
Yeah, I read a book. So the practice I bought in Nashville was designed for the dentist to stay. I mean, I presented this same package to him, and what was crazy about that is my prayer for me growing this business brand is to support women. And I ended up, God gifted me a practice with a male owner. And so it was my second practice that I've essentially linked arms with a partnership, and it did not work either. It didn't even last 5 months. The first one lasted 11 with a woman and 5 with a man. And 87% of dental partnerships fail. And that's just not something that I want to be on the kind of the top part of our, we're moving, we're growing, we're attracting the right women and we're operating. And I just don't want that to be a part of my story anymore.
Could I ask, Megan, why it didn't work out? Or like, what are some signs that we could look out for? And if like somebody offered us a partner and we're like, this sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to pinpoint. I mean, even going through it a couple times, I felt like, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of almost like anything. When you spend a lot of money, your expectations go up. And there's a lot of money involved when you're partnering and a lot of debt involved. And so your expectation rises and we're human. And so that's the only thing I can think of. It just puts you on another level or like adds so many layers to it. Like one silly example is I acquired this practice and, you know, it wasn't intentional that I shifted from a napkin that he used to buy to a napkin I bought. I literally was drowning in all the other moving parts of acquisition and changing all my information over it, you know, just like, and somehow I bought the wrong paper towel and it was thrown at me about how, yeah, like, just like, this is so cheap and who are you? And so I don't know. I think it's where either it's our personalities or it's the money that's involved or, you know, the female partnership, we love the idea of sharing a space and having balanced life, but we had different shifts. And so she would paint the wall one color and I would come in and paint it a different color. Like the practice wasn't even going in the same direction. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I don't know what it is. That's why I'm kind of hoping my model works and that people are attracted to it because they can still make really good money and have the autonomy and feel like they're owning a business. Because I don't want to be there. I want them to run it. I will insulate them with the processes and systems that have worked, but I give them the autonomy to make some changes, right? And I think we all just want our space.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think we do. I don't have the magic answer to that.
No. It's true. Somebody once said like, there's a lot of practice owners out there who are just really, really great associates that never found their right associateship. So instead of owning the practice, you know what I mean? You just got to find the right one, I guess you can say. And that's what you're creating, right?
Yeah. And I don't know if I told you this, but I sprinted through every avenue because I was looking for happiness. And I think a lot of people think that the happiness comes from ownership. And I'll be quite honest with you, it's hard to admit, but ownership doesn't make me super happy. I mean, it is a 24-hour constant thought. So I think if we could just maybe groom the younger generations of dentists to know that ownership isn't what's going to make you happy, and then we can work together. Because I think that there are people that are dentists that should own and run a business because we understand what it takes for all those things to happen and not a DSO or a business investor. So I would hope that as the evolution of dentistry continues to change is that we just figure out which dentists are really good at running the business and which dentists are really good at treating the patients and partner together, because I think it could work and I do believe it's working. I'd hope that all my doctors would say, I love working for her because of X, Y, and Z. I think it works because they know more than me clinically. That's kind of the cool thing is that I've hired better people than me to do that part. And so they feel very confident in that. And I'm not threatening them. Whereas typical partnerships, like we both know the same thing and we don't want to share, kind of, it's a mentality. So I think that there are going to be some dentists that need to be groomed into this position that I'm in. And then there are going to be dentists that need to be the ones that stick with patient care. And then we can make partnerships work.
Yeah. So then would you say, Megan, you feel like you're finally right there or not yet?
Yeah, I'm very close. I recently had a dentist in Austin who had a baby. So her first baby and all the feels came back and we didn't have coverage. We weren't prepared. The baby came early. And I mean, the only thing I knew to do was just hop on the plane and go. And I covered her for 6 weeks from Tennessee to Texas. And, you know, it was when it happened, I can't tell you how hard I cried. Like I couldn't believe that this was happening. You know, but now that I've gone through it, I'm like, this is kind of part of the happiness is giving back to others what I didn't get. And it does feel really good. And I do believe that I get really emotional, but I feel called to live an uncomfortable life. I don't think we're called to live a comfortable life. And Dennis, we're just lucky that our industry provides such luxury. So I feel pretty happy. And, you know, I get to pick the days I want to work and pick the days I don't. And that's fun because, you know, with Dennis, we're tied to that schedule. So I feel pretty good. And I've been able to pour into my own soul again and my physique and just things that I really neglected as a dentist. And I think my kids see a better version of me. And yeah, it's been good. I think we're there.
So if you could define for you, for Macon, right? Like that's what happiness looks like?
Happiness, I think for me, what did someone tell me one time? I was at the park and someone said, I was with my kids and someone says, "You're rich." And I looked at them like, what? What is that? And I wanted to be like, oh, if you only knew how much debt I would. And I was like, I'm sorry, like questioning him. And he was like, "You are rich in life. Like you have so many blessings, those kids running around." And he saw my husband and I interacting. And I think that was a moment where, you know, like, yeah, I think that you're handed cards in life and it's how you play them and who you're playing with. And I feel really good about what I'm doing. I hope that one day, you know, the stories come up and they feel the presence of a servant, because that's really what I feel my happiness lies in is being a servant to others, patients, employees, my family, my husband.
I like that. You mentioned something about the merit system that you copied or you wanted to like mimic, you know what I mean? What is that like?
Yeah. Yeah. So the best thing that's ever happened to me as a business owner is having children. They love incentives. And I love the book Well Done. If you've ever need just an inspiration on how to incentivize team or your kids, there's a parenting version. But people want to be caught doing good things and be rewarded for it. And we sometimes do it opposite. Anyways, I'm not here to parent, but we try and catch people doing things good without them knowing, like, whoa, like, oh my gosh, that was amazing. And so we, well done. And we give out, this is again, not my idea, someone I hired that was better and smarter than me. We give out fake money throughout the day. We call them Shroot Bucks. I don't watch the show, but I think we have fake $100 bills and we give them out for certain things. So like if you get an online review with your name on it, you get $200. And so the Shroot Bucks go out left and right, incentivizing, and then they can cash them in for a bunch of things. So they can buy new fig scrubs with them. They can buy the team lunch. They can build it up and save it for our quarterly auction. So we do a fake auction in our office. And so they bring thousands of dollars to the auction and we auction off items. So that's one thing that we've done that's been really, really fun. And the merit for the doctors is really just getting them to think more than just production. I do pay my doctors on net production, but they need to know more about what their responsibilities are. So incentivizing them to have a social presence, also to retain their team. So anytime a patient leaves the practice, we go through this very lengthy process and the doctor that is the clinical provider has to read it all and sign it and review. And so it puts them kind of in charge of that. And we're still kind of working on that. It's hard to, like, obviously I'm going to pay them. So I don't like pay them less because they got a 4-star review, but we hold them to a high standard. So yeah, my son went to camp and he just he just was a different kid. I mean, this merit thing I do with my kids, they wake up and then they make their bed, they get X amount of points and they brush their teeth and get themselves ready. And then they can cash those points in for things that they would prefer to do. So yeah, it's fun.
Interesting. Okay. I like that. I like that a lot. And so if we kind of fast forward to the startup that you have right now, that's Fee for Sure. Is it open yet or no? Not yet.
No, it's not.
Okay. So the startup that you have that's going to be Fee for Service, how is that different from the acquisitions in the past so far when it comes to, I guess, your marketing and advertising and what you're planning to do as far as like the demographics and everything?
You might want to ask me in a few months, but I'll be honest with you. I think that location is everything. Mm-hmm. I did a startup in 2020 and did not do any marketing. And it was, I owe it all to the location. This location of this startup that's opening this summer is in the best location. It has a lot of traffic, but it's still on a 30-mile-per-hour road. It's in the heart of downtown Franklin. So I believe that marketing now is customer service. I think the customer service is the new marketing. All you really have to do is get a couple advocates that come in and have a really great experience, and they will spread the news. And I love Facebook. They have groups and communities, and they'll say, hey, what dentist do you go to? And people love to help us out. They just talk about their dentist, and it's organic and it's free. So I think that is what's unique about the lane that I've stayed in dentistry is tapping into location. And I know everyone can't have this, but I've God's just put me in affluent communities. Like, he knows I have the patience for it. That's what's worked for me.
Hey, nice. So then throughout this process, I guess there's been a lot that we kind of touched, but throughout the process of, I guess, once you moved to Tennessee till today, what's been some of the struggles or fails or pitfalls that you've experienced?
Oh, that hits kind of deep. Yeah. Wow. It's been the hardest part of my journey. I have been painted in a light that I am a bad person and that I use God to make things sound better. So my faith was really tested, and that's hard to do in a workforce and stand firm and know that God had a plan for me. And I didn't worry about revenue. We actually increased revenue by over 30% with all this going on. I also experienced the first time ever embezzlement just recently when I went to Texas for 6 weeks to go cover my doctor. My right-hand man embezzled from me, and I'm still living through that now, finding out promises or, you know, trying to rebuild morale with every person that he was an extension of me while I was gone. And I'm having to hear things and try and rebuild them from a place of humility. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is, I think this is just the world. I don't think this is dentistry, but, you know, dentists specifically, we did not go to dental school because of anything really other than that we want to care for others. Yes, some of us will admit like, oh yeah, we want to make money, but because I do think comparing it to other professions or businesses, we are very lucky how much money we can make in a 4-day week or whatever. But yeah, I've had some very hard things happen. Luckily, I will say that, and this isn't for every dentist, but I have a really good personal life. When my kids and my husband are everything to me. And if someone that had to go through this did not have that, I don't know that it would have ended super well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, did you end up pressing charges on the embezzlement or no?
I did not. I actually handled it kind of myself, which was my husband went, but I caught him, and luckily it hadn't gone on very long. And he was like, oh, you know, I see you blocked me out of all these things, like no need to meet me. Like, we'll just send me my last paycheck. And I said, no, if you want to avoid embezzlement charges, I need you to meet me at this place and this time, and I need the money back. And he gave me the money back.
Oh, wow. Did he say the specific reasons, like, you know, I needed more
You know, now all these other things are coming up. I think I was dealing with somebody that might have a mental, like he may be unaware, like a almost like a habitual liar. And what was crazy is he was the most vibrant person. I thought he hung the moon. He was the one that brought in the merit system, the Schrute Bucks, or not the merit, the Schrute Bucks. And I mean, we kind of mourned his loss because he was so fun and very well spoken. He came from the hospitality industry, had done restaurants and hotels only. Yeah, I don't know if he really understands what he did.
Yeah, man, that's pretty tough. And then the one where you said you felt like you were being painted as like that, you went to court. It wasn't like a clean breakaway or.
When I met with all the DSOs, I figured out their game. They're like, do all this fun stuff like, oh, yeah, like your practice is worth this, but we're going to carry back 10% for this many years. And then you have to do all these things. And So I did it to him because I was like, well, this sounds pretty good. I mean, again, I will learn something and like, why reinvent it? If it works for someone else, do it in dentistry. So I just took that and I carried back a percentage of the asking price. And he had to fulfill a 12-month agreement so that I could retain the goodwill and the patience. But he didn't. It was almost like he couldn't stay 12 months. And so he knew that probably and made everyone else miserable, like destroying the goodwill that I did buy. So the 10% is what we were battling. And I just felt very confident that he did not earn it. So yeah, it didn't go super well. And for him, like we were able to do a fair shake, but there was just so much damage that was done. That was just, it felt like a nightmare. Like I didn't know when it was going to end. I at one point almost pulled a Father of the Bride where you go back and sell the home back for a premium. And I was like, wait, I wonder what he'd buy this back for.
Yeah.
I could make whatever in 5 months if I sold it and he'd buy it back for $400,000 more, I might be willing. But at that point, I was so heavily like rooted in the darkness in that place. And I think people who have been around me will tell you, like, I am very open about my faith with my team and my patients. And so I just felt called to stand firm in that. And I didn't want to hand it over to him. And we have had some organic attrition of the darkness in the practice. And it's starting to feel like a healthy place for people to work.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. So then, Megan, final piece of advice you'd like to give to our listeners, whether throughout this whole process or anything that they can utilize.
Yes, I use this with my personal life and my professional life, progress over perfection. And you just have to remind yourself that it is a journey and you just have to celebrate the 1%. And progress is progress. And you will never be perfect. And like you asked me, I will never find perfect happiness. I don't think that's even the end goal in life. So celebrate progress with yourself, your team. And for those of you that are married, one of the best pieces of advice I got was don't date a man to marry him, marry a man to date him. And just putting your marriage, that's a relationship that will never go away. And your relationships with your team and your patients are important, but it is really important to focus on your marriage because everything else trickles from that, your work life, your family life. And so that is one thing I've been very grateful for, that I have an easy partner to do that with.
Wonderful. Awesome, Megan. Thank you so much for being with us. If you can let us know, what do you got working on right now when it comes to this movement?
Yeah. So this movement is to disrupt the industry. And I really hope to see more team-like approach to dentistry. I hope we all realize the market's crazy and you just can't wear all the hats. So figure out what your skill level is and what your role is. And then I hope to create a movement to encourage others that we can work as a team and lighten our load so that we can have a little bit of a work-life balance and sustainability for patient care so that does not I think a lot of what we're seeing right now is that the patient care is the one that is lacking because we're trying to do too many things. So that's hopefully the movement is to disrupt that industry so the patients don't suffer because we are trying to do too much. And that's a goal. I hope it's a movement. I don't want to really be alone, though. Again, I would love other people to join me in this movement.
Yeah. Awesome, Megan. Thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Oh, goodness. I'm working on my websites right now, but my main location is Steiner Dental in Austin, and my Instagram is @renovatedpurpose. So you can find me there.
All right. So that's going to be in the show notes below. And Megan, thank you so much for being with me on this episode.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. And Megan, thank you so much for being vulnerable, opening up, and letting us know more about your life and guiding us through your journey. It helps us out a lot, helps me out a lot. So thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. I truly appreciate you. And if you want to reach out to Megan, pick her brain, see a little bit more of what she's doing, go in the show notes below, look for her name, and then there's all the links where you can reach out to her. Her contact information is right below her name, so make sure you reach out to her. And are you struggling with high supply costs at your dental practice? Dive into the dentist supply company's world of competitive pricing, slashing your expenses without cutting corners. Plus, with our exclusive promo code, which is TDM25, that's TDM2525, you can save a whopping 25% off orders over $500. Some exclusions apply, but that code is TDM25. Don't let supply costs nibble away at your budget any longer. Go to their website, tdsc.com. That's tdsc.com. And then when you decide to get all the supplies and you're ready for checkout, use the coupon code TDM25 and you will get 25% off your orders. Go in the show notes below. Click the first link in the show notes below to start shopping for your supplies now. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I'll talk to you in the next episode.